Today is October 6, 1993. This is Margaret Van Cleve. I will be interviewing Marge Haglund, a longtime resident of Fairbanks who has been active in civic affairs in Fairbanks and one of the founders of local garden clubs. This tape is made possible by a grant from Igloo No. 4 Foundation, Pioneers of Alaska. We are recording in Mrs. Haglund's room at the Pioneer Home in Fairbanks. This moving to Fairbanks is an adventure in itself. Describe your trip to Alaska in 1939. By what means of transportation did you come up here?
When we left Seattle, I wanted the Alaska steamship boat. Our whole neighborhood were down to see us off. They thought we were going to the end of the world. And we left Seattle on the 19th of August, arrived in Juneau, the 22nd of August. From Juneau, we took a Pan Am flight to Fairbanks and arrived here on the 22nd of August, 1939.
Well, how did you feel when you got here? What was your first impression?
When I looked down as we circled the field at Weeks Field, the dirty runway, dirt runway, and the few scattered places around, I thought, my gosh, what am I getting into?
So did you have, was your husband already here at that time?
Or
did
we came together.
Came together. And so did you have a place to stay right away?
Well, we didn't know where we were going to stay at the time we left. And Dr. Carter, who was one of the pioneers in the Fairbanks Clinic, was renting a home from Dr. Sutherland up on Noble Street. And of course, he was a bachelor. And so he told us we could move in with him up there. There were the two, Paula, myself, and the two twins. And rain. Oh, it rained those days, and I didn't have a double push cart to take the boys anyplace in those days. And they were only 3 months old when we arrived. And I look out, and the clock was so slow moving ahead, I thought, well, what am I going to do? And I didn't know anyone really, but Mrs. Dick, of course. And it was surprising. The people that were in Fairbanks in those days were willing to share anything they have. And the first thing you know, someone would be knocking at the door. They come with a big bowl of blueberries or cranberries or vegetables from their garden. And it didn't take us long to start to get acquainted because everyone was so friendly in those days and never locked your doors. And
The community would have been quite small in the core of Fairbanks, Calumet, Cowles, in that area. So you could go pretty much every place on foot.
That's right.
On dirt streets.
Well, let's see. I don't know.
So how long did you stay with Dr. Carter that you moved in with, the bachelor?
Yes.
Gave him a real...
And I don't know how long we stayed there, but I do know that we moved 5 times in 2 years. And there were few places available in those days to rent or buy, but the prices they had on the places for sale were very high for those days. And my husband, having been working in some of the mills in Seattle, the wood mills, he couldn't see buying a place that had nothing but a dirt basement and no permanent wall side suit or anything. And the rooms, most of the places didn't have a central heating plant in those days.
It's just a wood stove or a coal stove in the living room, and that was about it?
That's right.
Most of the houses, I guess at that time, most of the houses were log houses, or were there some frame houses?
No, there were some frame houses too. This one place, it was owned by a teacher, and she tried to sell it to Paul for $15,000, and he couldn't see it. He started scouting around for some property. And finally, after moving from one place to the other for 5 years, he finally came home one day and said he located a lot for us, which happened to be the lot at the corner of 5th and Callum Street, where we eventually built our home.
Yeah, the house is still there. The house is still there. I drove by it the
right.
other day.
Still there, and I hated to leave that place. I don't mind telling you. And when I came in here, I can remember crying. I don't know why, but it's just the fact I was leaving this place I'd lived in so long.
Well, you raised your family there, and had, I'm sure, a lot of fond memories.
I remember one morning real early after we had moved into our home, we had a fire. The boys were still in their bathrobes, and the doorbell rang. It was Paul had already left for work. And I went to the door, and this old gentleman was there and introduced himself. He was an old German, and he said that he had promised to bring my husband some moose steaks, so he was delivering them. And at that time, he lived up on the Chena River. They had no main road up the Chena in those days. He walked down the river, and it was at least 30 below that day. So I invited him in and invited him for a cup of coffee, and he hadn't had breakfast, so I fixed something for all of us. And he sat in front of the fireplace afterwards and talked to the boys, and we discovered that he was doing a lot of experimenting on this place that he had, but up on the Chena, with different sort of fruit trees. And so I have often wondered what happened to that place, because he had one daughter, and she came up during the time he was ill. She told Paul she wasn't interested in the property at all, and he gave it to Paul. And Paul turned around and turned it over to the university. Whatever happened to it, I don't know.
About where was it located in terms of where we are now? Was it towards the university, or was
it? No, it was up the river, up the Chena River from town.
So going up towards the base and then Chena Hot Springs Road?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I've often wondered just what transpired. But that's one of those things.
Do you remember the man's name, the German man that lived there?
Do I what?
Do you remember his name? the man that brought you the
No,
Easter,
I don't remember.
Just an old-timer that was...
Yes, some old-timer. Apparently, you've been up there for years and done a great deal of experimenting with different fruit trees.
Hmm. Yeah, a lot of people did a lot of interesting things with agriculture in those days, including your neighbor, I guess, Mr. Lawson, across the street from you, was quite a gardener.
Yes, and now he's staying with a young couple. You know, it was his home
that burned
not long ago. And John and I drove past there, and there were about three or four couples of young people that were in there apparently sorting out some of his things. Mm. And at present, he's staying with a young couple that we know. We've been trying to get him into the home here, and they had him for an interview a few weeks ago. But they have a list of about 45 on the waiting list.
Well,
so you have to take your turn.
As your name comes up.
So it'll be about 2 years before I could get in here. He's 83 now, so.
Well, during your early years in Fairbanks, I guess you saw a lot of change with the build-up at the base lab field.
At that time, they were just starting to work on Eielson Air Force Base.
And lab field, too.
Yeah. And lab field, we knew most of the doctors out there. And we used to go back and forth all the time. We saw quite a bit of difference between the Army personnel and the Air Force personnel. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah. Do you remember the fire of 1946 downtown? You were probably only about three blocks away from it when it happened.
The flood?
No, the fire in 1946, I think it was Christmas Eve or somewhere around. It was... in the middle of winter. Yeah, that was... Yeah, south side of Cushman.
And then, of course, during the flood here, the heavy flood, we... I would stand in the window and watch these boats with a big fan on the back. They come by and they'd splash the water up on our front porch. And I was having a fit because we had nice hardwood floors, but it didn't seem to bother them.
So the flooring survived the flood?
Yes, with a basement completely full of water right up to the ceiling, and everything in the basement had to be done over afterwards. But the weather cleared. When we once cleared the water from our basement, the weather cleared, and we opened all the windows to help dry it out a bit.
Well, I guess basement is where most people store their treasures, things like pictures and any craft type of material.
Well,
you might
all
have.
Our library, all our whole library, and all mementos from my father's family were down in the basement. We lost it all.
Yeah,
there was just no saving. I tried to save some of the books and things, but. It'd drive you out of the house.
So it was probably a few pickup loads that had to leave with soaked material that you were sorry to see go.
We moved, and there was a young couple living next to us that had a couple of children. They moved in with us, and we moved all our, when they said that we were going to have a flood, I moved a good deal of our canned goods and stuff and lined it up on the floor in the hall upstairs. in order to try and salvage some of the things we thought we might lose. And this young couple with their two children moved in with us, and he still comes here, sees me quite often, always brings me some flowers.
Well, he knows you like flowers. And speaking of flowers, you are a charter member of a garden club and sponsor, I'm sure, of some of the other ones that came about, because I always hear your name in conjunction with the garden clubs. Could you tell me how they got started and some of the people that were involved in it at that time?
I was just interested in getting more people growing things, and flowers in particular.
It was a club, and then you would experiment with different flowers? Did you order seeds from outside?
And the clubs are still going.
Oh, yes. You see evidence of it, especially in the summertime with the lovely plantings around the Log Cabin Visitor Center and airport and other public places. So was that part of the original intent of the garden clubs? You wanted to plant flowers in public places early on, or was it
the original intent was to beautify around their homes, do something to make a more attractive community.
So what kind of flowers did you start out with?
Oh, everything.
Things that you knew from back home. And what did you find were the most successful ones? I always see things like marigolds and daisies in some of the early pictures of Fairbanks homes. But what are some of your favorite flowers?
Oh, I love flowers of any kind. I really have no favorite.
Yeah. So, did you do some planting at the log cabin when your club started doing that? When you started planting in public places, where were some of the first places that you planted?
Oh, we planted around the old library at First and Cowell. And one year we put in a lot of wild things there. But people in those days would come along and dig up stuff. Mrs. Sutherland, who lived across the street from the old library, would always have the waterfront with a lot of flowers and things. People would come along and dig up the plants. We put in shrubs and things around the old library. People would come and
take them,
remove them.
Oh dear. Not as vandalism, but just because they thought they were pretty and wanted.
I don't know. You can't account for it.
Yeah, it it's been a problem at the airport too. I think people will harvest some of the vegetables there. They were supposed to be there for show, but people couldn't resist a nice red tomato.
Well, in fact, one year, the Fairbanks Club planted delphinium out at the airport. They were beautiful, and they'd always go way up 5 or 6 feet, and they were quite an attraction for people coming into town. And then when they decided to revamp the airport, the roots were all dug up, and Lord only knows what happened. We never were able to discover what happened to those roots. So
they're growing somewhere else in Fairbanks. At least I see a lot of beautiful delphiniums out and around town.
I even had a beautiful deep blue delphinium in one of my beds. And somebody apparently wanted a plant of that awfully bad. They came in and took all the seed pods from my plant and dropped a handkerchief. And I never could locate the owner of that handkerchief.
It wasn't a monogrammed handkerchief?
No, it had a big chrysanthemum on it.
So, oh, well, at least they left your plants. Knew that you loved those. We were talking earlier about the social life in Fairbanks. When there was a dance, tell me a little bit about what it was like to get dressed up and go out at 50 below to a dance or some other social
function. In the early days, there was a great deal of competition among the old ladies of the town in their cooking and trying to outdo one another. And I remember we always dressed up. Always. Everybody had a long dress, maybe two or three.
Long taffeta gowns.
And the first time we went to a dance, I think they called it the Fairbanks.
See, there was Eagles Hall, and then there was
Pardon?
Eagles Hall, and then there was another place, was it Moose?
No, what I was thinking about was the name of the dance club.
Oh.
It's now extinct.
Mm-hmm.
But
this would have been during the war then, early 40s.
And I went in there, and it was cold that night. And I was flabbergasted. People with their skirts way up over their heads, removing their long underwear and when they're getting ready for the dance. That really stayed with me.
I guess most people would walk to town if they were going to a public place like that. Didn't you put your cars up for the winter, so when you went out?
We never put our car up for the winter. Mm-hmm. Of course, Paula had to have car all the time.
Being a doctor, right?
But,
so you were pretty close to the clinic then, and as well as the hospital, your house.
Well, you know, when we built our house, everybody wanted to know why we were building so far out of town.
And that's two streets over from Cushman and five streets from the river.
And, and then in our building, we had in our living room and our dining room, we had a real high from the floor to the ceiling in windows, great big windows. And everybody knew we were going to freeze to death.
You just didn't want to get cabin fever.
So, children could get down on the floor and on their bellies and look out, they could see everything was going around.
Yeah, I like having windows, especially in the winter when it's so dark.
Yeah, but you still go around and see these little tiny windows in places. I don't know.
I think mental health is worth something, and being able to see out makes me feel a lot better. So I've heard that. Well, I know you're a good cook, having read about you in the cookbook that was put out by the News Miner, but I've also heard from other sources, one of your husband's nurses said, oh, the Christmas Eve parties at the Haglunds were really special, that you used to have nice dinners for the employees, and then your husband would provide the entertainment. Would you tell a little bit about that, some of the Christmas parties that you had?
Well, we just put on a dinner and tried to see everybody had a good time. And Paul, of course, would take out his accordion and play away with it for a while.
And people would sing along with, I guess he played Christmas carols and music on demand if there was a favorite tune somebody had. And this was when you were in the Kellum house, when you were in your house on 5th
yes.
and Kellum.
Eastern Star and PEO and...
So you, a lot of women belonged to clubs in those days.
And...
Imagine most of the women with children were home during the day. So you got together and met at various...
We were very fortunate in having nice babysitters. We had, I usually kept three on the string all the time, so if I couldn't get one, I could always get the other. But Mrs. Mackey down the street was a French gal, and she was very excitable. And I remember one time we came home from the lake, she had been babysitting for the children. And of course the war was on in France, and she was just up in the air, so.
Oh, concerned about her family. So, oh, by the lake you mean Harding Lake? You had a cabin there?
Yeah. Yeah, we built our cabin there in 48. In fact, John and I have been going out there every Sunday lately. The weather's been so nice.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that it's so nice, and it's October 6th. But after last year, I think we deserve this nice long fall.
Well, we have a nice little range in the cabin, and John had started a fire to kind of take the chill off the place, and then he and the dog would take a long hike and come back several hours later. And
you keep the home fires warm.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of people built cabins about that time out at Harding Lake. So many families would go out in the summertime, and so your neighbors here were your neighbors down there, too, as well.
The thing is that I think this recreation out here has sort of drawn a lot of the people from the lake, because the lake takes about an hour to drive out there, and they seem to furnish a lot of recreation activities. And it's much simpler to get to for the people, you know, from here now than it was in those days.
So you would go out mostly in the summertime rather than out for a winter weekend?
We used to even go out to our lake place in midwinter, and we cut ice for the ice house, and often we'd have a group in.
And then people would ski. Would people do cross-country skiing, or was that not?
Well, they did whatever they wanted to do.
And I guess some people even now do ice fishing.
That's right.
Yeah. It's nice to get away regardless of what the temperature is or the time of year. See, where was Fairbanks Clinic located at that time when you first came? I know it's moved around several times over the years.
It was located above the First National Bank building at 2nd and Cushman.
At present-day Key Bank, yeah. So he was really very handy to St. Joseph's Hospital.
That's right.
Did he often get called out into the bush to take care of patients?
Oh, yes. Oftentimes he'd fly out, regardless of the weather, and think bring a badly injured patient in to the hospital. And if they were real bad, he had a nurse accompany him. But in those days, you were on call 24 hours a day. Sometimes you'd go out at night, and I'd have two or three calls waiting for him when he came back. But he was a sort of person that if a child was ill, he never turned down a call. He'd always go out. He'd come back and say, you know, I just can't afford to send them a bill. When I see how hard the husband is working to make a home for the children and feed his family and all, he said, I just can't afford to send them a bill.
Hmm. So people probably paid him in produce or whatever they had, or did they do some labor around your house in exchange for medical bills?
Well, I don't know. Paul would have to tell about that because I was never consulted in those matters.
You knew the phone just rang or was likely to ring any time.
He had always, since he was 12 years old, he wanted to be a doctor. And he finally arrived.
Was he also from Washington State?
Pardon?
Was he from the Seattle area too?
Yeah, he was born on Bainbridge Island, just across from Seattle.
Oh, sure, yes. Mm-hmm. And you met in Seattle?
His brother-in-law, Dr. George Dowling, was one of the founders of the Mason Clinic, along with Dr. Mason. In Seattle.
So he did his medical residency in Seattle? At the clinic?
Yes, and he served some extra time in the University of Virginia with Dr. Funston in their orthopedic area. His big love was orthopedics. He just loved it. And however, when we first came here, he did everything.
I guess there weren't many doctors in town at that time, maybe a half dozen.
There was Dr. Sutherland and Dr. Sutherland, and of course Dr. Gillespie and Dick, but Dick was more of a near an eyes and throat man. And what was that other doctor's name? Dr. Swartz was here at that time.
Now, were they all associated with Fairbanks Clinic? Some of them were private.
No. No, practice. Dr. Swartz was separate and apart. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Sutherland was on his own.
Yeah, he was, about the first doctor that came to Fairbanks.
He was?
About the first doctor that came to Fairbanks, Dr. Sutherland.
Yeah.
Early on.
Yeah, he and Mrs. Southern had a clinic up on Clary Summit.
Oh. So
I have pictures of it in my in one of my scrapbooks.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there was a big mining community out there at that time. I guess it was a community in itself.
Yeah. Clary was just over there, Clary Mine. Was just over the hill.
Mm-hmm. So we were talking about what life was like for families in the 40s, as you knew it. What about the schools? What would have been the closest elementary school to you at that time?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I think our Fairbanks school do a very good job. And I remember when they first started putting on bus for the winter, our boys were going to main school at the time. And they were all excited, came home. So we managed to get them out to the corner at the time the bus was supposed to pick them up. And several different times they had to stand on the corner and wait, so they thought, oh, to heck with it, and they walked the rest of the time. to school. They couldn't be bothered waiting for the bus.
Stay warmer walking than you do standing in one's thought. I guess they figured that out. What about groceries? Where did you shop for groceries? Because that was before the days of supermarkets.
Oh, well, let's see. Leibry's had a store down at the corner of 2nd and Cushman. And let's see, the name of that meat market, big meat market, was down the street on 2nd Avenue.
Between Cushman and between Cushman and Lacey Street, that block. Oh, I think I know where you mean, which is now a parking lot, as so much of Second Avenue is.
I can't remember the name of it. And then, of course, Lindy's came in later.
Mm-hmm. Piggly Wiggly.
And he was there on
Barnett
Street.
Yeah, he was there for quite a while, into the 70s. I remember that. And then, of course, out in college.
Yeah, then he was located in the building that, this old-timer built. And Bob and Mary Kloss both worked for him there. Penska's, Martin Penska.
Did you know, or was that before you came? Did you know
no,
Martin?
No, I knew him.
It started out as just a general merchandise store?
Yes. He built that store where Lindy later moved in at 3rd and Barnett.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who has it now since Lindy died. I think his wife perhaps sold it.
Yeah, there is another business, maybe an insurance business now. I'm not sure. But
you're thinking Ken Murray's, but Ken Murray was, on this side of the corner. Mm. Ken Murray is in here at the home now, Senior Ken Murray. Okay.
Yeah, I look at the roster out there. It's Fairbanks history, people that have spent a lifetime here.
Well, he hasn't been in too long, but I'm not much good at this sort of thing.
Oh, I think you're doing fine.
It's all...
Well, that's how a lot of things come to mind. You start talking about one thing, and then that brings to mind something else. So, okay. I think everybody who came, well, certainly in the early days as yourself, probably met Eva McGown pretty early on in their...
Well, I had heard about Eva McGown, and as I say, we really didn't know many people, but soon after we arrived, we had an invitation from Dorothy Robe to come to her home. She was having a group in, and in introducing me to different ones that came to even, she had met Paul apparently a day or two earlier. She just went on and on, you know how Eva was.
And yeah, she was quite a dynamo.
But you know, she had a heart of gold, that woman. Mm-hmm. And never a Sunday passed but she went over to the hospital and had some little, maybe a stick of gum or a little piece of candy for each of the old timers in there. She really was off. And I remember her one time bringing me a couple of fresh eggs. She got them from her neighbor close there, where Eva lived. They had a few chickens, and Eva got these eggs from her. She brought them. Of course, in those days, you know, you bought eggs, but they might be months old by the time you get them. So fresh eggs were quite a treat.
So what was the occasion that she gave you a couple of eggs? What was the occasion that she gave you a couple of eggs?
Oh, she just came over to call.
Just to have a social visit then.
Yeah. She was a great person.
Yes.
She always had a dozen scarves around, pinned here and there.
And the hat.
She was a great person.
I was always sorry I didn't see her room at the Nordale Hotel with her delicate china cups on a shelf. And yeah, she was.
But I'll never forget the time I met her at that party, and I could have gone through the floor.
You didn't expect such a rousing introduction.
Yeah.
She made you feel welcome.
Well, I was a little embarrassed, to be perfectly frank.
But that was her way. Yeah, she was sincere. That was the main thing. So you probably knew a lot of the original settlers to Fairbanks. Can you think of some others that were in your neighborhood that?
Well, you know, my husband knew more people than I did, but I remember going down the street in Fairbanks. We passed somebody and they'd speak. I said to Paul, "Who was that?" He said, "It's so-and-so." He knew a lot more people than I did because he got around a lot more.
Right, yeah.
But they were a great bunch. That great Fairbanks Exploration Company were worth their weight in gold. They really were. Lovely lot of people, and Fairbanks wouldn't be what it is today if it wasn't for the FE company, because they built all these roads to the outlying areas and one thing another to the gold camps.
So they really developed not only the mining camps, but as you say, the roads going to them.
That
and
right.
Some of the houses, I guess, on Illinois Street were F.E. Company.
The one?
The houses on Illinois Street were F.E. buildings.
Yeah, they were all F.E. homes. In fact, one year, while we were looking for a place to live, we spent a few months in one of those houses that Jack and Jack Boswell had been living in it, but in the summertime he was out on the creeks. So the FE company officials gave us permission to move in there.
That was one of your five moves?
One of the five moves.
Yeah, they had nice screened-in porches and lovely trees.
And there were no refrigerators in those days, you know. You put your stuff out in a box on your front porch during the winter time to freeze your things.
What did you do in the summer for refrigeration? Did an ice man come around or?
No. No, we just use up our supplies, so we didn't have anything to save over for the winter.
Just sort of go from day to day. Yeah, or if, I guess some people might have had root cellars, it would be cool, but probably not in town. There were some things, though, that were hard to come by in Fairbanks, like specialized treatment. You mentioned that your sons needed orthodontia work. What did you do about that?
Well, I took them outside for orthodontia work, and a friend of ours who lived in Seattle invited them out one time to go fishing on Green Lake. And the boys were real thrilled about it. They got out to Green Lake and they were just elbow to elbow all the way around the lake. They couldn't see that for love nor dust. They were used to going out on the Chena River and fishing, you know. And
Yeah. You
had it all to yourself.
Yeah, after living here, that's a hard thing to have to give up. We are not used to crowds.
No, Louie never invited them to go fishing with them again. And that was understandable.
So after the war, I guess quite a few people moved in to stay because the base was here. Did you see a lot of, what sort of changes did you see during the 50s, just prior to statehood? What can you think of as being just more people?
Sometimes I wonder where all these people come from and why they're coming up here.
And the town is still growing. Of course, there's the university, which is growing. Did people from town get out to the university much in those early days?
Well, the students that were going out there used to walk from town over the railroad tracks down to University Station, or they'd take Paul Grimman's bus. Mm-hmm. Paul Grimman and Flora were driving buses between the university and here on occasion.
Mm-hmm. I guess that seemed like a long ways out, though, in those days.
Well, of course, people would hike it, never think anything about it in those days. We're spoiled now. We can't go from one block to the next unless we have a car. Out in June to spend 11 days with my son in the Seattle area.
Oh, one of your sons lives in Seattle now.
Yeah, he's with the FAA. Mm-hmm. And he lived in my home on 5th and Kellum until he finally sold it. Meant to me, he couldn't afford two homes. And so he finally sold it and he bought a home just about 3 miles from the Seattle-Tacoma Airport, which is very close to his work.
So,
and his wife works for the Northwest Airlines. She had been 20 years in service with them before she came up here. And then she worked with a combination of airlines out at the airport, or out at the Wainwright. And then when she left here, she went back to Northwest in Seattle.
So
it's real close to their work.
So airplanes figure very strongly in your family's line of work. Pete is also in flying up here in Fairbanks. Well, it's a lot easier to get back and forth as opposed to your first trip. What do you think about Fairbanks now after having been here 54 years? Did you ever think you'd be here that long?
Well, I've never regretted moving up here when we did. I find that the people that come up here today are so different from the people that were here when we arrived. Their attitudes are different. In those days, we never locked our doors. Never thought. Now you can't even feel safe with your place all locked up.
Just a different attitude.
Yeah, and the difference in the attitude of people. They come up here thinking they can make a killing, you know, and go outside and spend their money instead of spending it up here.
So, not as many, or many of them don't have the commitment that people did earlier on.
I don't know. Just the difference in individuals. Mm-hmm. They're all looking for the big money. They don't realize they have to work just as hard for it here, maybe harder than they do outside, but try to convince them of that. It's impossible.
So it's been a pretty good life, you think? It's a pretty good life up here if you are willing to work for it.
Well, you just have to. We've always laughed because in going down the street sometimes, we'd run into people we didn't know and had been out here at one of the bases. They just hated it when they were up here. Absolutely hated it. Sold out what they had here and left when we returned to the States. And it wouldn't be too long afterwards you'd be going down the avenue and run into them. They were tickled to death to be bad.
I've heard that many times from a number of people that they don't realize how good it is until they leave and then they want to come back. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for sharing.
Well, as I say, I'm not much good at this sort of thing.
Oh, I think you did fine. And everybody, I read something that really impressed me, that history is a collection of biographies that we're all part of history, whether we are out making history or if we're just watching it on the sidelines, and that we all contribute in one way or another. I thought that was kind of a profound thought, and I thank you for your time this afternoon.
Oh, well.